So as you'll have no doubt seen from the episode title, this episode of the Cov Pod is all about local elections and the huge amount of work that takes place to organise and to oversee them. So with that in mind, I have the perfect person to kick us off. Martin Reeves, Chief Exec, Coventry City Council. Thank you for your time.
Aaron, great to be here. Really, really pleased to be talking about the elections.
So over the next 10 minutes or so, I'll be asking Martin to tell us more about his role as the returning officer, overseeing voter fraud, and whether it's true that you can actually go to prison if it all goes wrong. So let's have a look at your role as returning officer. Obviously, I'm aware of the council and your role as chief exec in the council, but something I wasn't aware of was your specific role as returning officer. Just give me an overview of what that is and what that entails.
Yeah, happy to do that, Aaron. So without getting into the boring kind of law and statute and regulation, as a chief executive in local government, you are what's called head of paid service, which actually separates your role to say that you are therefore responsible for the whole of the workforce, for how the organisation operates. And that's well known. But actually, the returning officer role is set with a completely different legislation, which is completely sensible because obviously you want to separate it entirely from the political part of any organisation, in our case, the City Council. So therefore, it's a completely independent role. So when I'm returning officer, I am judged, quite rightly, and held to account by the Electoral Commission, not, for example, by the elected members here in Coventry. And that's right because obviously it's a political process. It needs to be fair and transparent. So a lot of people don't understand that's a completely separate, independent role. Just happens that most of the time it's the chief exec that will fulfil it. Doesn't have to be, but most of the time it
is. Which is what I was about to ask then. So it isn't tied solely to the role of chief exec. Could you be return officer without being chief exec of the council?
Yeah, so most of the time, and certainly here in Coventry, obviously I've always been the returning officer for all the elections and I'm the chief executive head of paid service. If you go up and down the country, there are a number, for example, the chief legal officer might end up being the returning officer, a deputy chief exec or a senior director who's had a lot of experience of elections in the past could be designated as the returning officer. So no, it doesn't have to be the chief executive.
How long have you been returning officer for the city?
So ever since I've been here, so over 13 years now and had experience in previous roles as well. So I've been on it for quite a while now.
So I think we mentioned it at the beginning around how you could potentially go to prison if this all goes wrong. And I know you have a team of people who support you to make sure that doesn't happen. But so is that true?
Yeah, I don't think any of us should be flippant about just how critically important it is for any election, whether it's the local elections, whether it's parliamentary elections. We've had referendum in this city over the years I've been here. Whatever the type of election, the European ones we had before and so on, that all of those come with huge weight of responsibility, quite rightly, to be fair, to be transparent, to be effective in their execution really as an election. And in that, there is what's called an election petition. And quite rightly, if any candidate, agent, other third party believes that the elections have not been carried out according to the law and fairly, they can actually go to court for a petition. And that is really, really serious. It happens rarely, but it can happen. And in that, quite rightly, as returning officer, it's that independent role, I should be held to account. And I could well be up in front of a petition in the courts to be held to account if something has gone badly wrong. And that does have, you know, potentially really, really severe repercussions.
So effectively, the buck stops with you in that way. How is that day-to-day looking then to make sure that process is fair, to make sure that your team is delivering as they intend to?
So it's a really good question, actually, around how you de-risk something as critically important as the elections. And just think of it as like any big project, really, where you want to get the right people, the right skills, whether you're doing it at home, whether you're doing it as a hobby, or whether you're doing it at work. So what we do is we literally plan through spreadsheet after spreadsheet. We have risk mitigation plans. We have contingencies. We make sure we've got experts where they need to be. We scenario plan absolutely everything. But the other thing I'll say is, I've been doing this for a long, long time and I've seen every single type of election. The Liz Reid and the elections team here are amongst the best in the country. They've seen every single type of scenario and that experience teaches you how to ensure you don't go down a road where you're increasing risks of potentially finding yourself into a petition or some other challenge. So it's hard work, it's hard yards, but you should always be confident with the experience that you've got to make sure that you don't do anything which would get you into that particular situation.
So one of those things that I could imagine could get yourself into trouble is around voter fraud. Give me an idea of some of the measures that are taking place locally to make sure the vote and the election is a fair and true election.
So I think, Aaron, in terms of voter fraud, there's a lot said about this, and people listening will be aware that government over the years have trialled different things about trying to reduce the fraud. In Coventry, there have been issues over the years, long time ago, but there are always concerns, quite rightly, about making sure whether it be the postal votes, whether it be actually what's called personation, which is obviously, as you know, when you go into a polling station, you give your address and actually someone can put you off on the register there. You don't need, for example, your polling card. So something called personation is where you could go in potentially pretending to be somebody else to cast your vote. You could potentially try and vote twice. Now, I just want to set everyone's minds at rest. This does not happen regularly. However, because we have so many checks and balances, and literally there are dozens and dozens on every single bit of the election voting process, if we see or hear or are told of any potential way in which somebody is fraudulent, then that is incredibly serious. And actually, it bypasses me as returning officer, and quite rightly, and goes straight to the West Midlands Police, who have a specific point of contact and a particular group of experts that deal directly with that fraud. And we've had to deal with that in the past.
So I think the importance of making sure that the council are on top of voter fraud is local elections can often come down to small amount of numbers in between them. So it's decision night and the votes are coming in. What would happen if something is a dead heat?
Yeah, so I've actually never seen a dead heat in all the years, all the different elections I've done. And you are right, Aaron. Actually, if you look at local elections, and particularly some of those, as you say, that could potentially be really, really close. I've seen them very close. And of course, under those circumstances, on the count night, you go back quite rightly. The candidates and agents will say, can you please recount? So I've done three, sometimes four recounts. And what ends up happening is, even if the numbers are small, let's say there's five or six votes difference between candidates, by the time you've done three or four, you can prove actually that the number keeps coming back to that. However, if you do get to a point where all of those checked, all of those recounts, and literally is a dead heat, then our process in Coventry, which is different around the country in terms of how you do it, some draw lots. We literally get two clean ballot papers. We put the name of the two candidates that are basically are dead heated, one on one ballot paper, one on the other with a cross. They get put into a ballot box, and then me as returning officer then pulls one of them out blind. And that's how that person then gets declared as, and there, that is the way you do it. As I say, others have lots which are drawn, long and short lot. That is the only way you can actually ultimately decide a dead heat. There's no other way of doing it. You can't re-elect. You can't go back to the electorate. You do it by one of those mechanisms.
See, that's so interesting. I think I've watched something, maybe West Wing or something, when it had to be decided on a flip of a coin. Yeah. Now, I thought that was a myth, but that's amazing to see that. And I guess that's what you're saying there around being prepared as much as you can for every eventuality, yeah, is having things in place ready just in case something like that happens.
Yeah, because the thing about elections during the day, they are, just think about it. This is for, if it's local elections, you know, the councillors are either going to try and remain again for another term. Those that are coming in, maybe for the first time ever, they've put themselves up, and that's a big, big opportunity, but also a challenge for them to be elected. But whatever the election is, the stakes are really, really high. You know, people are putting their heart and souls into it. They really want, obviously, to get that, ultimately, more votes than anybody else. So in that spirit, you bet your life, what you have to do is consider all of those scenarios I said earlier on. But above all, be clear to the candidates, the agents, everyone that's there. This is the process. This is the transparency of it. If this happens, this is what we will do. And that communication on the election night, when everyone is tired, remember, you know, Aaron, sometimes I won't be getting up until 3-4 o'clock onto the stage to declare the results. So people have been out from very early in the morning, all through, so people are tired. So actually to be honest and open about delays, but also to be really clear about why we're doing it. And, you know, finishing on the bit about dead heat, you know, if you think about it, there is no other way. You can't, with the cost and the requirement to go back out, you can't go back out for an entire re-election based on the fact it's a dead heat. So there has to be a way of deciding. And it feels quite bizarre with all of that tension that, and it's not something I'd like to do, I have to say. I've never done it, but I guess it could produce some excitement in the council.
Do you look forward to election night?
I love election night. I love the whole build up. Genuinely, I love the build up to elections. I get, I don't want the best phrases really. It's probably just butterflies because I realize how important it is. It's exciting. It is democracy in action. And you realize just how tough, also exhilarating the election world is with regards to politics and the fine lines between winning and losing. So I feel the heavy weight, as I know the team do, of that. But above all, it's incredibly exciting. It's exhausting because actually, once you've done the election day itself, you've hopefully got the declarations, which are a really important part of the process, done effectively well. Then obviously it's very last moment, but you've got lots of paperwork to fill out. You come back to office, maybe only having a couple of hours sleep to literally complete all the rest of the paperwork. So thankfully the elections are on Thursday night into Friday morning. Then you've got the weekend to recover, but it's really exciting. I genuinely love it and the team do as well, but it's hard work.
So before I let you go, for the people listening at home who may not have intentions to vote, as is their right, what do you say is the importance of local people having their vote and having their say?
If you've registered and you've never voted before, please reconsider getting yourself along. It's dead easy along the polling station near you or by postal vote. Please exercise your vote. Those that have voted in the past but maybe now think, oh, what's the point? What difference? Every single vote makes a difference. I've already said that in local elections, but all elections, your vote does count. And I think if you are frustrated, disappointed with what's happening, if you're particularly excited about some of the plans for some of the politicians, go and put your cross in the box, because there is nothing more powerful than exercising your right. And I would finally say, without going over the top about this, Aaron, you know, the truth is there are countries around the world that to be able to have democracy, effective, transparent elections is feels like a long, long way away for them. And here we are with, you know, an amazing opportunity, whoever you are, to be able to vote however you wish anonymously. And it does make a difference. I count them. I see them. The teams count them. And every single one will vote, of your votes will count. It won't be tossed to one side. Provided it's a legitimate vote, it will go on that tally.
Martin, thank you for your time. I do really appreciate it. I know how busy you are. So giving me up your time to speak to me, I do appreciate it.
Anytime. Really hope this is of interest to people.
As we've just heard from Martin, there is such a huge feat in order to take in everyone's vote from across the city. And there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes. And I'm really pleased to have Liz Reed, who's the Electoral Services Manager, with me today. And what we're going to do is look at the work that goes into preparing for an election. And we'll look at some of the different ways that people can vote and the work that goes on behind the scenes. Liz, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Give me an idea of the various ways that people can vote. And maybe let's think about what it was like last year in 2021 when people were being encouraged to stay at home as much as they can.
Yes. So obviously there's three options for voting. The main one being polling station voting. So you're allocated to a particular polling station. You have to go to that polling station to be able to exercise your vote. You can also request to vote by post, which means your ballot paper gets sent to you in advance of polling day. And you have up to 10 p.m. on polling day to return that postal pack. But once you've been issued a postal vote, that's the only way you can vote. You couldn't go then change your mind and go to the polling station. If you can't get to the polling station and you don't want a postal vote, you can appoint someone to go and vote on your behalf, and that's called a proxy voter. They would have to attend your polling station, although they do have the option to apply to vote by post. But often proxy voting is done as a late minute because you have a longer deadline in which to apply to vote by proxy. And what the government did last year and have extended this year is the emergency proxy provisions, so that if somebody gets COVID or is wanting to isolate because of COVID, they can appoint someone to go and vote at the polling station for them, and that can be done in the last 5 days before polling day, so and up to 5 p.m. on polling day. So that was introduced specifically because of COVID and will remain for this year's elections as well.
And did we see a huge increase locally last year in postal votes?
So we did have an increase in postal votes last year. Actually, we doubled our postal vote numbers. Some of that was some proactive measure that we undertook in January last year, because we wrote to all households reminding people who was currently registered. And if somebody hadn't already got a postal vote, provided a postal vote application form just in case people felt that that would be a more comfortable way for them to vote in view of the circumstances with COVID. most of those applications were permanent applications, so we remained in place for this year.
Okay, that's good. So let's talk about polling day itself then. So I'm aware that there are lots of polling stations around the city where people can go and register their vote, but just give me an idea of what that looks like of the day itself.
Okay, so we have 140 polling stations situated across the city supporting the 18 wards. Each ward is broken down into a number of smaller districts. So I think the most polling stations we've got in one ward is probably 12, but it can range from sort of 5 up to 12 within a particular ward. And there's a smaller geographical area within that ward that will be allocated to that polling station. That requires quite a lot of staff as well. So we end up putting about 500 staff into polling stations for the day and supporting those staff in the polling stations throughout that day as well.
And are those roles voluntary? Are they something that we kind of support them with?
So basically the returning officer, who is Martin, who you've already spoken to, employs those people for polling day. They can apply to register their interest in working on elections via the council's website. Just put in working at elections and it gives you a link to register for that. And then we get them enrolled onto our staff database and carry out all the normal staffing checks to make sure people are eligible to work. Because it's paid employment, you have to have the right to work in the UK to be able to work on the elections.
So when all of the votes are collected in, and then it comes to the subsequent count, give me an idea of the scale of what that looks like.
Yeah, so we use the Ericsson Halls at the Coventry Building Society Arena. So it's quite a vast space that we use for counting of the votes. We employ 300 and plus counting assistants that sit down at the table and do handle the ballot papers that come back from the polling stations and the postal votes. And then we have a lot of senior staff that have to support that process. It's quite a complex process because each box that comes back from the polling station, the first thing we have to do is check the number of papers in that box before we even look at who people have voted for, to make sure that number balances with the number that the presiding officer says they've issued. And we also have to check the ballot papers that weren't used to make sure that those two add up to the number that we issued to that polling station. So there's lots of checks and balances to ensure that it's you know, done properly. And legally we have to do those processes. And then once all that's done with that and the postal votes, we then start sorting by candidate, and that's when the interesting bits happen.
And then what they'll then do is count those up, and then there's an announcement of who's won that particular ward?
That's right. So they'll split them by candidate, and all of those figures are tallied up to work out who's won the seat. We get a lot of doubtful ballot papers as well, so that may be where the voter's intention is not clear, and sometimes voters leave nice messages on ballot papers or drawings to express an opinion, which gives us a little bit of a laugh on election day, but that, you know, that's everybody's right. So once we've got that result, we then have a consultation with the candidates to make sure that they are confident that we've carried out the process open and transparently, and they're happy with the provisional result. And then if we're happy, then it's announced. But if it's very close, we might end up having a recount.
So give me an idea of something that has happened, and I'm sure you've seen lots of things happen over the years, but maybe a challenge, maybe, I think, wasn't there a box, I think, that was found or last year or so? Has there been anything that you remember that sticks out in your mind that you had to try and overcome?
So I know the situation you're talking about, there was a suggestion that there was a box missing. It wasn't missing, it was just, it hadn't been emptied out onto the table and we hadn't verified it. Or we'd verified it, but it hadn't been counted when they were sorting by candidates. So that's why we have those checks and balances, to make sure we can account for every ballot paper. So we've had those sorts of situations. We have had a situation where a presiding officer haven't got back to the arena with the ballot box. So we then have to find out where they've got to. Not for this authority, but colleagues of mine across the country. We counted a story once that they'd... were trying to find a presiding officer that had gone missing. They'd decided to go home and have a shower first before they brought the box to the count venue, which obviously is quite, it's funny from their point of view, but actually if I'd have been in that position, I would have not been happy.
Well, I guess it's like planning for a wedding. There's only so much planning you can do beforehand, but on the big day, anything can happen. Yeah. And I guess that's why you have the various checkpoints throughout the day. How is it looking then for the next election? Are we hoping to have more in-person votes, or do you think people have now got a taste for the postal vote and that might continue?
I think it'll probably be, I would expect it will be about the same as last year. The fact that we increased our postal votes in the city quite largely does not make us any different to any other city. So our percentage of postal votes is about the same now as any other city, whereas it used to be less. So I think, and looking at the statistics from last year and the turnouts, etc., we're probably looking about the same as normal, hopefully. Obviously, the postal votes give people more, it makes life easier in terms of voting. You haven't got to find that particular one Thursday in May to trundle down to the polling station if it's raining, you don't want to go or whatever. So hopefully we'll see the same level of turnout, we'll wait to see on that one.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you for your time. I really think that it's a huge task. I think I've followed it live a few times, or there's been videos of it, and you can see how huge of a task it is. So good luck with the next one.
Thank you. And we will be streaming from the camp venue this year as well, so hopefully people will get to see it in more in person as well.
So we've already spoken to Martin about the importance of voting and the huge amount of work that goes in from a high level. And then we speak to Liz, who talks about how the council day to day prepares for polling days and the election night itself. But I'm really pleased to have Alan Cox here with me today, who has had a role as a presiding officer and is going to talk to us a little bit about the on the ground work that goes into polling. So Alan, thank you firstly for joining me.
Pleasure.
So, Alan, give me a bit of an idea then about the role of a presiding officer, what that entails and how you came to start that role.
Okay, yeah, presiding officer, basically, I will be in charge of a polling station. So for my polling station, I believe there'll be one poll clerk. So the poll clerk is my responsibility, in effect. As presiding officer, if there are any problems, they'll come to me. I do have a polling station inspector that I can then refer on to, and obviously the office is open at the council house throughout the day. In terms of what the actual role entails, a lot of it is at the end of the day. There'll be a lot of tallying, making sure that the number of ballot papers we've issued equals the number of votes that we've had, making sure that all of the paperwork goes in the correct folders and the correct envelopes. The ballot box needs to obviously be sealed at the start of the day for 7 o'clock when the voting starts, and then needs to be closed and sealed at 10 o'clock p.m. So all of those different things all need to be finalised at 10 o'clock. I will then take the ballot box and all of the different paperwork to the Coventry Building Society Arena to then go to the count, which will presumably be either overnight or the following day.
Okay, cool. And how did you start doing this role then? Is it a voluntary role? Is it something you get called upon to do one day a year?
It's not voluntary. We do get paid. So how it came about for me is I actually had a friend who had worked at the counting, the poll count, and he said to me, you know, it's actually quite good fun. It's something I think you'd probably quite like. You get paid to do it. Why don't you inquire about it? And I said to him, next time you get the invite, can you let me know that it's around that time, which he did. So I started off by doing the counting, the poll count, which generally, elections are obviously normally on a Thursday. Generally, those counts are overnight, then straight away. I think I have done one before, which was on a Friday morning. I did as well start by doing the ballot box receiving. So when the presiding officers go to the football stadium and drop the boxes off, you have runners that will go and collect them and make sure that we've got all of the different envelopes, all the different folders and the boxes, and basically sort of tick them off. So you bring those into where the count takes place at the arena. That's how I started off. My dad was still working at that point, and I said to my dad, this is something that, you know, I think you'd really be interested in as well, but he used to work nights. So as soon as his working pattern changed, I did the same as my friend had done for me. I said to him, you know, the invites have just come out, you might want to contact the elections office at the council. I think this is something you'd be good at, something that you'd be interested in. So when he first did it, he called me and said, yeah, I've just had it through and I've just ticked the box to be a poll clerk. I said, I thought you were going to do the counting with me. So I then had to look into what the other roles were. So I started off doing the poll count. I then, partly because my dad had picked poll clerk, I then looked at what that entailed and thought, actually, that looks quite good as well. And I ticked that and I did that for a number of years. And once you've done poll clerk for a number of years, you're then entitled to apply to the role of presiding officer.
How many years in general have you been involved in it?
I think it's been 10 years or so. I'm not sure exactly, but I think it's been about 10 years. Yeah, a couple of years doing the counting. I did a number of years doing poll clerk. And then I've done a couple of years now doing presiding officer. To answer your earlier question, it's generally one day per year. We have had two in the same year for a couple of times recently, whether it's to do with sort of local elections and then government elections, or whether there's been other things like Brexit. But the council office are pretty good. They're normally in quite close succession. They'll normally appoint you and you'll do both of those dates.
So Liz was telling us around, obviously, the importance of making sure that every vote is fair and the huge amount of work that goes into that. Have you got any anecdotes that you can share with us about life in the polling station, anything that's happened over the years?
Yeah, I'd probably start with the poll count, actually. I mean, I'm not particularly into politics. I'm not sort of active in that respect. Obviously, it is something that affects us all, and so we do take an interest in the news and so on. I didn't understand the process, I don't think, fully. I didn't realise the amount of work that goes into it. And what I would say is, I've heard a number of people say, oh, I take my own pen. I don't want to mark my X with a pencil. That can be amended. That can be rubbed out. And I would sort of urge anyone to have a look at being involved in the poll count, because the organisation of it, the scrutiny of it, you've got your table laid out that you're sitting at with your colleagues to count the votes. You've got a metre gap or so to a little barrier, and the other side of the barrier you've got representatives and candidates and interested parties that are scrutinising your every move. There is absolutely no way that you could be involved in rubbing out a mark or changing a vote or anything like that. The scrutiny of it's unreal. So that's the sort of something for me that I probably didn't realise before and learnt quite quickly. The organisation of it is amazing, really, and the number of votes that come in, that get tipped out of the boxes, put onto the table, and then you're sort of separating them into different piles and then counting those piles, banding them up into packs of 10. 10 packs of 10 would be 100, and so on and so forth. And obviously then it becomes part of a much, much bigger picture. And even down to then, actually, if the number of votes don't quite tally with what we need, having to go and do it again.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with local elections. They can go down to the wire. There can be kind of a small number of votes in between them, which obviously makes it so essential that all the votes tally up. So give me an idea about how people can get involved then. I know you spoke about your dad and then how your dad got you back involved in a different role. Give me an idea of how other people can get involved.
Yeah, I think, obviously, I don't work for the council. So for me, it was sort of via a friend. They'd had an email. So once you're involved, you kind of get the reminders. There is a portal that you can access. You can answer letters with regards to your availability or to accept or otherwise your actual appointments. I would say to get involved, you'd contact the council. There's an elections department, there's an elections team. If you go on the Coventry City Council website, there'll be contact pages that will direct you towards that. There's phone numbers as well for the elections office. The staff there, obviously you get to know the names. You've mentioned Liz and her name tends to be on the bottom of the letters. And Sharon does the appointing, who I've kind of got to know a little bit as well. So, yeah, they're a friendly team. If there's any problems on the day for me when it comes to election day, that's who I'll be ringing, and they help resolve any issues. So everyone that I've been involved in it with has been really, really good, really supportive, knows their stuff. So, yeah, I would, if anyone's interested in getting involved, I would contact the council, either come into the council house or contact via the website. And I would recommend it personally.
So that was my next question, was then obviously you get paid for doing it, but what is the motivation for you to do it and to continue to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there is payment, you know, so it's a job. Mm-hmm. So like most of us, you wouldn't do most jobs if you weren't getting paid to do it. You know, we want to pay the bills and so on. This is like an additional extra for me because I do work. I tend to take a day's annual leave to get involved. Particularly, I mean, if it was the vote counting overnight, I'd tend to have the next day off because I'm going to be tired. This year, as a presiding officer, obviously, I'll need to take the Thursday off work, and it's a full day. It can be a long day. In terms of why I would recommend it, why I enjoy it, you get to meet different people. So I've worked with lots of different people, lots of interesting characters. I've worked alongside my dad now because I've got him involved, so that's obviously makes the time pass. When you've got people there that you kind of know and trust or that you get to know, it can make the day quite interesting. It's a long day. You've got to be there 6:15 latest. Obviously, the polling station opens at 7 and goes through non-stop until 10 p.m. You can't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So it can be a long day, but you'd be amazed how quickly the time passes. And the process itself is actually quite interesting. Seeing how it all works, seeing how you tally everything together. We do hourly tallies so that we know that we're on track, that the number of papers we've issued tallies with the next paper that we're about to issue. The number, they're all numbered, so you know that you're on the right numbers. You're unlikely to go wrong. I just find it quite an enjoyable experience, and I think working alongside other people as well, that's been the good bit.
When you and I spoke before, as kind of part of the planning for this interview, you mentioned around some of the stuff you do with refereeing. Yeah. I guess, does that tie into maybe some of that idea of organising and seeing an event through from start to finish, whether that is as part of your presiding officer role or the 90 minutes of football?
Yeah, that's a good point, because I think there are similarities between being a football referee and any kind of work environment, really. I see my role as a football referee. I referee at a reasonably good standard, semi-professional football. Mm-hmm. So my job is to see a game through to a successful and safe conclusion, which is almost the same description you've just given. It's man management. It's about trying to speak to players and trying to organise players to get them to act in the way that you want them to act. That's not very dissimilar to organisation, managing staff, managing the voters, and seeing that day through to a successful and safe conclusion. There are some similarities, and I think probably the man management side of it, what people might refer to as people skills, is quite a big part of it.
I played football for many years, and I think that I often saw from the referee side how they treated me different to how they treated somebody else in my team differently. I was always the moaning one. But I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's people skills. It's how you treat people differently, and you recognise that some people respond to things. I never gave referees much of a thought when I was there, but now I'm older and I look at the thing, actually, these people are doing it because they enjoy the sport and they want that feeling of the day-to-day management of a game. And I think I've always, I don't know, as time's grown on, grew more and more respect for referees.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess from my point of view, I did play football, but only locally, played with my friends. I'm now involved in football games that I probably wasn't good enough to play in. Mm-hmm. So it's a way for me to be involved. It's a way for me to stay fit. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, some players need a different approach than others, but that's exactly the same as when you're at work. Mm-hmm. Some of your team members might need a little bit of motivation in one way, and some people might just need an arm around the shoulder. So I work for a housing association as a manager. I've got currently nine staff on my team, and they're all individuals. Yeah. And they're all rent officers, income officers. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to get money into our housing association. Yeah. They have to have those same skills in terms of some tenants will need more of a rocket, mm-hmm, to warn them, and other tenants might need a little bit more support. Mm-hmm. And it's knowing that it's not one size fits all. Mm-hmm. That's definitely the case, you know, come May, when we're at the polling station, there'll be all sorts of different people that come in to vote. You know, obviously there'll be people that have disabilities, there'll be people that are maybe visually impaired or blind, there's people with children, there's people with dogs, mm-hmm, that, you know, you get all sorts of different scenarios. You get people that maybe want to help their relative, or people in wheelchairs, and elderly, young people, that it's their first time voting. There's a real wide array, and actually it's knowing this person knows what they're doing, this person doesn't quite seem to know what they're doing, how much help and support can I give? And obviously you've still got to remain impartial, and you've still got to allow them to make their vote in secret.
Thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it. I know you've taken some time on your lunch break today to come and talk to me. I do really appreciate it, and good luck with the upcoming elections.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thanks for having me.